Session number 16718, Major Wilfred White, Reel 13.
Mr. White, Reel 13. Who were your opponents? Were they Germans or Italians?
These were Italians, young Italians, and some of them were older than me now, but the young fascisti division was occupying the fort.
Now, and were they good class troops?
I would say not really, but of course, back to the wall, when you've got you're within the sights of fight as well as anybody, but they had no stomach. Not that I don't know anybody that has got a stomach for hand-to-hand fighting, chucking grenades at each other, but they didn't like that much. But the point was, I met the steel doors at the side of our sort of advance.
Were the trenches concrete or...?
No, it was deep.
Dug into rock or what?
It was a rocky sort of subsoil, but they were beautifully engineered, probably done by the French in the way, because the French built the line, you see. And they ran out in all directions to concentrate or to disperse, to counterattack or whatever. But there was the door to the fort. And guess what? It wasn't locked. So I gave it a thump and, you know, felt of what do I do now? A thump. Come out. The door opened and about 101 came out, you know, fantastic. The whole lot, well, they were ready for, you know, they'd had enough. What with the fire coming in from the machine guns and us nobbling their outposts or whatever you'd call them. And they came out, surrendered, included, I was told, a company commander, an Italian company commander and his lieutenants. And we'd achieved our first, the objective. We had to clear the area up. But I said, now this is the time for you to go back, Teddy. And I gather he didn't. We sent the prisoners off with a couple of our lads and some few wounded that I could lay my hands on. And
was the enemy retaliatory fire quite intense at this time?
Yes, but not on us, because we were in the shelter of the fort, if you know what I mean. But there was a hell of a battles going on all around us, you know, and they really were pacing. It was, I read that people thought, some of the Durhams thought that it was the toughest one yet, you know, for that sort of thing. And we took up a defensive position just forward, and the side there was a road, a track road, and I was on the left-ish, and the other two platoons were on the right-hand side. And we were highly elated, you know, but what we didn't realize is that the enemy fire was tending to be a bit lighter on us, but it was all going over our heads onto the poor lot behind the wadi, all the vehicles, on the men on with the vehicles, the engineers who were trying to get some sort of cover for the tanks to come over to cross the wadi. they were working under tremendous difficulty. And of course, it held back all our supplies and all our support weapons. And why bother with us at the moment, was the German thinking, when they were stopping anything coming forward to us. Because sooner or later it was going to be difficult. And that went on all the daylight and night. And we got word that we had to get forward and clear. There's a ridge in front of us about 600 yards away. We had to get forward and clear that ridge to try and take the pressure off the lads on the other side of the wadi. And it was still, it was murder. And when we, all the, during the hours of daylight, you could barely move, you know. Stunk to hell. And then, in fact, I lost my sergeant and two NCOs. And that threw artillery fire, although I suspect it was our artillery fire dropping short. But anyway, we had the gunner, forward observation officer, with us. And he was firing the guns of the 74th Regiment, I think. And there was a target that was obviously a machine gun post on the hill. And we chased it all hours of daylight. When he got the guns for a shoot, that's where he was going to stonking them. And that night we went in to attack the ridge, and when I started the line that we had to form outside of our positions, you see, when I got out of the trenches that we were in, the slitters, the firing was horrendous. So there was some more trenches to the left I'd spotted before, and I thought, well, I'll get in here because I've got an hour to wait before we attack. So I go, come on. And the 6th Battalion were in them. So I was turfed out straight away. Get yourself out, you. So we went out, we had to lie in some sort of line to face up attack. Well, we were tired, we were knackered, we were hungry. We had very little ammunition. And what I had, I'd shared out amongst the guns, you know, the rifle ammunition. But still, you know, the lads will do anything they're told to do. And off we started moving forward. And there was this fire that wasn't bad. We could hear it going over us onto the wadi. And suddenly when we got near the ridge, I realized that the gun I'd been firing at, chasing the artillery, we were going to pass it, you know, as we went forward. Left flank, we're going to leave the gun. So I didn't know what to do, to be honest. So I waved the lads, go forward, and put my head down and went as fast as I could towards the line of the gun, because if it had been firing, we would have been all dead meat, you know. It was going to just... So I thought, well, the best thing I'd better do is, you know, get as near as I can to it and keep it quiet, because I still had two or three grenades. That was a plan, you know. At least I thought that was my plan. I was in a state, I don't mind telling you, I didn't. But I got up to the wire. There's a gap in it, went through the wire. I couldn't, but oh yes, I'd forgotten to tell you, I got hit. Very minor. I got hit before we went in to clear the fort. Got hit under my ankle of this foot. And it was beginning, it was nothing at the time, just a bit of shrapnel or a bullet. But after a time, you know, with not attending, bleeding and that, it was very, not only very sore, but it was, yeah, a bit difficult to walk. So I was dashing to get into cover to have a go at the gun. But it was only a fast, well, I called it a fast hobble. Yeah, I wasn't going all that fast. So I got through the wire, and a few yards in, there was another deep communication trench running across my front. And I thought, champion, that'll take me right up where the gun is. So I jumped in, but of course, you know, in the dark, it was darkish, just beginning to get light, I think. But it was, I didn't land very well. And when I started to move again, it was a different kettle of fish. But anyway, I thought, well, that gun's not firing off, I'd have heard it. That means there's either nobody there or they're dead. But I better find out what. Because it was too dangerous to have where it was, you know, if the guns were manageable. So I moved along the trench, and it was about, it wasn't the 10 or 15 yards I thought it was, because you know, it never is. It'd be near 50 yards or so. And with it getting light, I came to a position where I could look along the trench and I could see this dark sort of, again, a recess into the wall of the trench. That was it, I thought. So, again, didn't know what to do. You know, wasn't quite sure what to do. So I went a bit nearer and a bit nearer until I could see what I took to be a bloke. And I watched him for, it must have been a quarter of an hour, because the gun wasn't firing. And I realized he must be dead. So I got very brave, or relatively brave, and got up to things. And normally, if I hadn't seen that he was dead, I'd have bowled a grenade in, wouldn't I? Or done something like that. But I said, come out. And there's no answer, and of course, there's four men in there, all dead. And they had two, one was a definite machine gun, laid on a fixed line on a tripod, shooting right across at the front. And the other, I don't know what it was, I said, it was another gun of sorts, it might have been a range finder or something, range finder. And I examined each one of the four people, but I couldn't see how they'd been killed. You know, there's no mess. Maybe I didn't look closely enough. But it was a sort of a fairly large dugout. But the cover on the top was of a tarpaulin nature rather than a structural nature. So whether it was the effect of the gunfire, air bursts and, you know, that sort of thing, which had killed them, I would never know, at least. And that was that. And now a lad had detached himself. When I started running out the corner, I saw a bloke sort of trying to come with me. He probably hadn't heard that he had to go straight on. But I hadn't, you know, I'd totally lost contact with him in trying to sort myself out. But I thought, well, I better have a quick look around while I'm here. And I had a quick-ish look around, and by now it was daylight, and we were getting thumped. And he wasn't there, and I was making my way back along the trench. I've no idea what the time was. Making my way across the trench when I could see that tanks coming down to do an attack. and blow me down a company of infantry, or infantry about a company strong of the Germans, came through the position just ahead of me, you know. But I couldn't hear much firing, as though our lot had withdrawn. And I was virtually trying to work out what, you know, what should I do. I made up my mind that the best thing to do would be to keep my head down and try and get back to the Wadi area under cover of darkness and see if there's, you know, well, there was nowhere else to go, obviously.
Being on your own like that, it must have affected you in some way. Were you more afraid, less afraid? Being isolated and on your own from
people around you? My thoughts again was, well, you've cocked this up, White, again. You know. Been different if you hadn't made a dab for the machine gun, for example. Why the hell did you do that? There was nobody manning it. But I didn't know that.
Did you, was the feeling that you shouldn't have left the men? And
yes. Oh, yes. But I didn't see the point of leading the men. You see, I obviously thought a lot about it, especially when I was writing it down. And yes, I'd obviously thought about this, you know, many times. It wasn't like the first attack, the main attack, attacking a fort. Now, if I not appeared with my men and attacked the fort, which was the objective, they'd been held at bay, wouldn't they? But in my mind, when you're attacking a ridge and you think there's a machine gun there, you don't have to run and put your hands up to tell whoever's in charge, I'm not coming off it with you onto the ridge at this stage because I want to get that neutralized, because it would have had to be done anyway, especially if it started firing. So I was a bit queasy. You're quite right, but that was my thinking, if you like, on my feet in the heat of what was going on.
And you can only respond to a situation as you see it.
Yeah. As I said, if the attack had been a clear, defined objective, then that would have had to be the attack, whether there was machine guns there or there. But, you know, just take the ridge, and I'm taking my section of the ridge, but my section of the ridge included this nonsense. Now, taking the men had to go forward with the rest of the company. That was my thinking. And frightened, yes, of course, always. And I was lying, sitting down after that. I saw I had two bullets left, two rounds left. Oh, left-handed, sorry. Fired them. I couldn't say whether that hit anything or not. Threw a grenade at the tank, and I was sitting down as this lot had gone past me. No, it was before the attack. I was scrabbling around ahead and got myself tense to do something, and it was an officer from the 6th Battalion. And so we swapped notes, and, you know, I can't even remember what his name was. But we talked together, and a few minutes later, lo and behold, an officer in the East Yorks appeared. And this was before the Germans' attack had come through, you see. And I told him the same, you know. Can't remember what they told me, but we just discussed it generally. And then, as I say, whether it was 10 minutes or a half an hour, the attack came through. I did my stuff with my pistol and my grenade. To little avail. And I was going towards them to where they'd been, you see. They'd moved forward as far as I knew. When round the corner came two German officers. Oh, there might have been NCOs, but they were special, you know. I didn't know them. And they didn't speak in English, but they sort of laughed. I don't know quite. I must have looked aside, admittedly. They said, come on. And it was as simple as that. I was a prisoner. And they actually helped me out of the detention. They were very good to me. And he says, we'll take you to see the company commander. Oh, they must have spoken English. Yes. They all do, you know. And they had the company commander was laid out at the regimental aid post there. Regiment. We'd shot him through the thighs. He spoke perfect English. And he says, you'll be glad to be out of it. I says, well, I don't know you. You know, it's... Oh, he says, you'll be all right. You'll be... The war will be over before you get out. And he says, I'll be out in about 4-6 months' time, and I'll be at the Russian front. He says, you've done well out of this. And they admitted that the Germans realized that they were finished in Africa.
Before we go any further with that, what were your immediate feelings when they came round that corner?
Well, again, it's hard to think back, but it was something like, oh, hell, you're in it again. What? You know, and then I started analysing the actions of the past 12 hours or so leading up to it and thought, God, you made so many mistakes, right? I was terribly upset. I really was.
There's been a certain amount of unnerving, but you don't know what their reaction may be.
No, well, yeah, that's right. You see, I knew I hadn't any grenades and I hadn't had a pistol. And nothing in my pistol. And you come round a corner, you know, you're within arm's length of them. There was no intention to tackle them. Because all I could do was throw myself at them, you know, like the Japanese might. But
in your own relatively brief experience of actual fighting with your platoon, within the platoon setup, are there a number of men who are reluctant to move forward into a danger? A number who will, you're sure will charge in, and then group in the middle that will follow? Is it all with the same intention?
To be fair, remember there's only two relatively short incidents when I was a real soldier. And what I found was that the bulk of the men will follow you. But there's always one or two who will give more than that if there's any danger around. They're the boys that dash out and tackle the snipers that are on your flank and chase them and kill them. And they come back saying, got them, sir. But I never found any case where they've got to be driven.
Do they take a great deal of strength from each other?
Oh, yes, indeed. Yes, indeed. As I say, the sergeant, for example, just before he was killed, he went out and that counterattack took the form of fire, obviously. And they worked snipers forward. And they were a nuisance. But we chased them off. As I say, the majority of the men will do as you tell them, no matter what. But there's always one or two who will do a bit more.
So you found yourself, as say, this German RAP with the
yes
with the officer.
We did my foot. They took the boot off, cut it off, and it was a bit. It looked worse than it was because it had been bleeding and that, and the blood had dried and things, and they cleaned it up, which hurt, and then put a dressing over the top of it, which subsequently made it feel normal again, you know, comfortable. I don't know what it was. It was yellow stuff. And I got my shoe back on and stayed in. I swapped my boots for a pair of Italian things later on.
Was this post outside the firing line? Outside the actual attacking zone?
No, it was in the attacking zone, but at the back of theirs, but they were in our firing line. You know, the shells coming over the top.
Those British shells zooming over towards you.
Oh, yes, yes. So we're very much in the firing line. And then I was taken back a very short distance, about 4/4 mile, to where there was a post, sort of a prisoner collecting post, or a Feld, run by the Feldwebel, the field police. And I was questioned, and I gave them name, rank, and number, and said something like, "Your scorpions did very well, didn't they? I know about your scorpions." I said, "Well, tell me, because I don't. Because I'm just out of hospital." Or something like that. I can't remember how I handled it. But I thought they were wanting to know what the scorpions were and how they worked, but we changed the subject there.
Did they press you particularly hard on the subject?
Well, they were tenacious, if you like, you know, when did, oh, you know, come on, Lieutenant White or whatever I was, you must know the scorpions. Did you know that your battalion commander had been killed? That's what they said to me. I said, "Oh, no, I didn't know that." And, "Oh, do you know where he was called?" And they gave me the name of the 8th battalion commander who had been killed. They knew that. Now, somebody might have told them, because I wasn't the only prisoner. And it was round about this time that Ian appeared. He'd been knocked off. I don't know if he told you how he was taken prisoner, but...
Did they know that you were Durham's? They knew the regiment?
Oh, yes, I think they did. Yes, I'm certain they did. Because we are old friends, you Durham's, and, you know. Although they tried the charming... Because they knew bloody well they were going to be prisoners themselves within a matter of, well, if not hours, days. There was no way out for them.
There was no anger shown them?
No, none at all. None at all. That's what I like about the Germans, on that sort of basis, because with Italians, they do hop, you know, want to plunge bayonets into you, and because you, Inglesi, are done this and that and the other. But the Germans are disciplined. And our story nearly ends there. I'm now a prisoner of war, and we taken up through Tunisia on a train which was stopped frequently by our air attacks. The attack, our attack front was all crumpled, but we sort of pulled most of them there back. But the famous left flank had been taking place while he'd been attacking us, and the left flank broke through, and eventually, as you know, won the battle, won the day.